Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, with me, your host, Caroline Foran, author of both Owning It or Owning It in the States and The Confidence Kit. This week, I'm joined by James Kavanagh, who is quite a hard man to introduce, probably doesn't need an introduction, as you all will know him anyway. But we had a chat about how we hate being asked what we do or how to describe ourselves. So I'm going to describe him as one half of Cara Binney, co-author, award-winning author, TV presenter, social media star, and I guess you could just go on. There's just no end to his list of professional accomplishments. But James obviously joins me on Owning It this week to talk about anxiety and confidence and his experience of bullying as a kid in a all-boys school and the anxiety that went along with that bullying and what he's learned from it and what it taught him. And then obviously we talk about anxiety in his day-to-day life now. In more recent years, anxiety is something that has presented itself for James, and we kind of explore why that might be the case, because he says himself he's happier now than he's ever been and everything on paper is great. So why did he start to have these panic attacks in the middle of the night last year? So I hope you get a lot from this. I want to apologise, my sound just came out a little bit funny. The levels kind of changed a lot and oh my god, I just need to get a bloody producer. This is just a headache. But if you're focused on the content, hopefully you won't notice that it gets a little bit quiet in some places, and I'm sure I could do nothing about it. Well, I could, but I don't know how to. And I'm trying and my head is going to explode. Anyway, don't give myself anxiety trying to make this podcast. It's all about the content. So thank you so much for subscribing. As always, appreciate the feedback, appreciate the reviews, appreciate the shares so much. Thank you ever so much for all the lovely comments. It has made everything so worthwhile, and I'm so delighted that everyone is getting something from this. Looking at your Instagram and your Snapchat and everything, people probably think, whoa, here's someone who doesn't have anxiety issues, or here's someone who doesn't have confidence issues. And a lot of people who I've spoken to, they've come through it, or it's something that they had like years ago, or from my experience was 2014. But what you, before we went on air, you were saying that even as recently as last year, you were experiencing panic attacks. So people probably don't know that about you, that anxiety is something in your life.
Yeah, totally. And I always think anxiety and depression and those kind of feelings, they're not racist, they're not classist, they go for anyone. You can get someone at the very top who feels down, even though they may seem like they have everything. And then, just as much as someone on the very bottom of like whatever ladder you want to put anyone on. So yeah, like last year, about 2 years ago, I started to get panic attacks, and I don't know why I was getting them, but I was. And it would happen at the same time every single night. I think it was at like 3:30 or 4:30. I'd wake up, look at my phone, and I was like, oh my god, it's gonna happen. And like that, it was like this fizzy feeling running up through my body, and then this kind of sick feeling in my stomach, and then really short of breath, and I was like couldn't take enough oxygen in, that I felt like I needed to live. And each time I thought I was going to die, I'd have this really thumping heart palpitation. And then I'd you know, it was maybe the 10th time it was happening. And
every night for 10 nights? Like,
it would happen like maybe two a week, okay, or that kind of thing. And by the 10th one, I was like, I knew it would end.
Yeah.
So I'd almost ride it out. It would be like I was on a wave and I was like, okay, James, just ride this out.
Yeah, let it happen.
Let it happen and let it pass and don't fight it as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, by panic attack number 10, I was like, it's not going to kill me. You know, I learned at that stage.
And now, do you have any clarity on why that was happening?
Well, I'm kind of doing, well, I'm self-employed now by 3 years. And when I first left my job in my full-time job in Peoria and jumped into this kind of self-employment, mm-hmm, working with brands, doing influencery things, I guess I didn't know if there was if it was sustainable, mm-hmm, and if it was always going to last. So I think last year I had a bit of doubt in my mind of when's the next job coming?
Yeah.
Is this truly what I want to do? So I think it was maybe a mixture of things like that, that I was always, mm-hmm, was panicked about when the next job was happening, or is this actually what I want to do? So, mm-hmm, I think it was coming from that kind of thing.
Were you frightened of the fact that it was happening to you? Did you feel, so for me, like such a big thing was, not so much the isolated panic attack, but like, Jesus, like this, I'm capable of feeling this way, makes me feel like not in control. Was the fear of the fear a thing for you?
100%. Like I got really badly bullied in school. Mm. But I never felt like down about it. I was angry about it. And I find anger is more manageable in a weird way.
Yeah.
You feel more in control of anger, yeah, for some weird
it's
reason.
More empowering, maybe.
Yeah, it is. And like, I used to get bullied in school really badly and go home and take it out on my parents. And I was the dominant one in the house. They were afraid of me.
Wow.
That kind of thing. Whereas when you're feeling down and sad and panicked, you feel lost.
Yeah.
You don't feel as in control as you are when you're angry or whatever. Mm. So yeah, I definitely was I was afraid of feeling that way, and I hated feeling that way because, yeah, there is a loss of control about it.
And you're more vulnerable.
Yeah, completely.
So if we go back then to James, as what age were you maybe when the bullying started?
I was probably aged 11 to 15.
So before that, were you a confident child? Was anxiety something you'd experienced?
Never, no. Okay. I went to primary school, as everyone did, went to primary school, and had the best time of my life. It was a mixed school. I was always getting the lead in the school play, loved life. I'm not a very academic person, so primary school level education suited me very well.
creative.
Yeah, creative. And this could be another conversation, but I really don't believe in segregation of the sexes for schools. I don't think it's not real life.
No, I went to mixed schools all the whole way up.
Oh,
it's so much better.
And you know what? You can almost spot people who went to mixed schools, mm-hmm, over people who went, because they don't know how to act around the opposite sex or whatever. So yeah, I went to primary school, loving life, skipping around the place. And there was never the bullying really happened because I was gay and because it was homophobia in the first secondary school I went into. But so when you're in primary school, there's not a real focus on sexuality.
No.
If you're a little bit flamboyant, that's just James. He's a bit eccentric, or that's just whoever. That's just the way they are. There's nothing. Mm. Oh, he's gay because of that or whatever. So there's nothing like that. And then I went to, skipped out of primary school, loving life with my gal pals, my guy pals. It was real life. Then went into the first school, which was all boys, very heavily rugby focused. You know, so I'm not that way at all. And I'm not putting anyone down who's macho or rugby, you know, into rugby at all. It just wasn't me. And if you weren't that way, you were an outsider and you were bullied.
And had you come out at that stage?
No.
And had you yourself were like, I'm gay?
Yeah, I knew myself. But because when I went into this school and how it was very, the word gay was always used in a negative way. It
like,
was
that's gay.
That's shit. Yeah. Oh, we got loads of homework. That's so gay. Like, you know, my lunch today was so gay. So when you're that age, though, it sounds funny now, but when you're that age, that you're just associating that word with negative. And I don't know what it is, but that age group, say like 16-year-old straight guys, are kind of obsessed with gay people. And
yeah.
is he gay? La, la, la. Like, it was an obsession for some of the people in my class. And because it was always used as a negative, I didn't want to associate it with that. So I became more insular, more inside myself, and right. more like I didn't want to come out or whatever. Then, as I was saying, I was kind of taking all this out with my parents. Mm. And they were dealing with a bit of a terror, to be honest.
And did they know you were gay?
They knew I was gay,
but
yeah.
But you hadn't had a conversation.
I hadn't had a conversation, no. My when I eventually came out, my mum was like, yeah, we knew.
Okay.
you know.
But they waited until you
They waited until I came out,
yeah.
Now, I don't know, like maybe there's some parents listening. I would have actually preferred if they reached out to me and asked me. Their reason is because, no, we wanted you to feel comfortable. And I get that as well. But sometimes if someone is going through, it's kind of like if someone's going through a dark period in their life, people often kind of skirt around them or eggshell around them. But sometimes a reaching out is good too.
Yes, even if they don't necessarily want it. Are like well receiving of it in the first place.
And I would say if they had done that to me at the time, I would have freaked out. But it would have been way better, I think.
Long term,
yeah. And then I think to deal with me, they sent me to boarding school. So I went
like
to boarding school. Well, I loved it.
Oh my God.
Absolutely loved it. And if I have kids, I'm sending them to boarding school because I went down really badly bullied in this all-boys school. You know, there was an air of toxic masculinity about the place. Hated it. So they were like, right, off to boarding school. So I went to a mixed school. Went there. Now, boarding schools tend to be melting pots of different cultures.
Yes.
So my school, for example, there was Asian people, there was Middle Eastern people, there was people from England, there was people from America, there was people, every race, every religion.
Yeah.
So when I went down there, I was just another kind of different person. I didn't stand out
yeah.
at all. So, and I remember some guy asked me in the dorm, he was like, are you gay? And I was like, right, this is it. I'm just going to be myself, whatever. I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, right, okay. Continued unpacking his bag. And I think once I owned who I was, no one had anything on me.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not I'm hiding. This is who I am.
Yeah. It's like, what are you going to say? Yeah, I am.
Yeah. So they moved on straight away. So that's why I love boarding school. It was full of, you have to learn how to deal with people in boarding schools. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn how to deal with different types of viewpoints, different types of religious points. So I have so many friends now from boarding school because it's like you're living with a family.
Yeah.
And kind of as well, when you're at that age, you kind of just want to be with your mates all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's living in a big sleepover.
Yeah. I suppose I've always had like a negative connotation.
Everyone does.
My mom went to boarding school and it was hell and, you know, it was with the nuns and she was sent away. And I was like, Jesus, why would any sane parent or any kind parent ever do that to their child? But obviously it was for you a game changer. So
yeah.
How long were you in school for with the bullying before you went to boarding school? Or
3 years.
You mentioned bullying. Like, what were things being said to you when you passed by? Was there any specific incident where you felt, you know,
yeah.
your sense of worth and self crumble?
Yeah, so there was one guy in particular who bullied me. We'll call him Bob. Because maybe he's a changed person now. I actually tried to look him up on Facebook, can't find him.
Mm-hmm.
But from first year to third year, like, he would make it his business to bully me and do it in very inventive and different ways. I always say he'd be great at marketing or something because he was just so creative in the way
yeah.
he'd bully me. He was the main one, and then there was a load of others, and my name was in every cubicle stall as James Kavanagh is a faggot. Like, that was I couldn't go into a cubicle stall without seeing my name on the wall and something like that. So it was when even there wasn't people around, I was being bullied by the shit that was said on the wall, you know?
Yeah.
So this guy, anyway, I found out years later, he used to put notes in my locker, but he'd write one with his right hand, write another with his left hand to make it look like there was different people.
Oh.
Putting, so I felt at the time it was just, you know, everything was magnified. There was loads of people hated me, loads of people were bullying me. Whereas it was kind of this guy orchestrating the whole thing.
Did you believe the things that he was saying to you, or did you believe the negativity? Did you start to think that about yourself, or did you always have the awareness, no, this is their problem?
No, I was a crumbly mess. I hated myself. Mm. Hated myself. I desperately wanted to be straight because, you know, this was such a negative thing in my school. And he got in my head, like, 100%. If you go into school, and you know when you're that age, school is your whole world.
Mm-hmm.
You go in at 9, you finish at 4, you may go to Dundrum, we live near Dundrum Town Centre, you may go there with all your mates after school, then the school discos on the weekend, there's the pre-debs, it's your whole world. And because I was excommunicated and isolated and bullied, I didn't have any world. Do you know what I mean?
And not one person.
No friends. No. A lot of people who I'm friends with now from that school were very nice to me, but always a little bit on the... They didn't want to be associated with me.
Yeah.
And in a way, I see their point of view too. Like,
they were trying to protect themselves.
They were trying to protect themselves, yeah. And then there was one game-changing whole... game-changing point in the whole thing was when I was in third year, and up until then, I thought, everyone hates me, I'm alone, everyone is nasty, la la. Bob. His name's Paul. Yeah. So Bob went to write this survey about me, and it was, how gay is James? And it was like very gay, extremely gay, like faggoty gay. Like, it was just, he tried to stir up this survey about me, and he wanted to present it to me afterwards to be like, this is what we all think of you. Oh, like, God. He was so insidious the way he would think. And he used one of those Bic pens and lined it all like perfectly. And this is 3 years of this. Like, every day there was something new. I used to rejoice when he was sick because he wouldn't be in that day. It was like a holiday. It's a day off. But anyway, he tried to pass the survey around, and it went back to this guy, David, who was in my class, who I love, still friends with. And David stopped the note going past him. And up until then, I thought everyone was a nasty person. And then when I seen him stand up for me and not let that note go on, I was like, oh my God, there's actually nice people in the world. Yeah. And my whole viewpoint changed from there on in.
Really?
So I always say, I do some talks in schools about bullying and now, and I always say, there's always going to be bullies.
Yeah.
I mean, we were having a conversation earlier. There's bullies in the workplace, there's bullies in school, there's bullies in college, there's bullies at home. Mm-hmm. Your siblings can bully you. But you can't delete bullies from life ever. They'll always be there. But you can be the one to stand up for someone. And that's way more impactful than trying to make sure there's no bullies in the world. I always say, be the David. Be the one that, like, can stand up for someone else, because that changed my whole viewpoint on life.
Yeah. And do you think, I mean, I hope that in this day and age, you know, if you had a kid going through secondary school now, that would be so far from their experience. Do you think the time where we were at, do you think that's gone now? Or would you have the same experience now, do you think, in school?
I don't think it's gone. No, I receive messages now and again from kids that are in schools that are telling me they're being bullied. And, you know, but I think my bullying was very focused. It was about my sexuality. And
yeah.
I think we've come a long way in terms of acceptance of LGBT people. So yeah. I'd say that type of bullying is probably less now. Not completely gone, though, because I still hear stories from people who are young, who follow me, who are in schools, who are still getting bullied about that. But there's other ways of bullying people. So I think that will always exist. But it's always about trying to teach young people that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and there's so many nice people in the world as well, and to always be one to stand up for someone else.
And did that ever come up for you again? Like, did you ever feel the need to sort of process that or make sense of it? Or did you just know that was a case of him, it being his issue? Because for so long you hated yourself. Did you have to do a lot of work then to start to accept yourself, or was it just like a flip of a switch?
No, it was an unraveling process. Like, when I got down to Wilson's, my boarding school, your man in the dorm accepted me straight away when I said who I was. But it was a couple of years before I was confident. He knocked the confidence out of me completely. And I have been looking at photos of me back then, and I'm like, it's like a different person. You can see my shoulders kind of coming inside myself, guarding myself. I'm like, not really there in the face. There's no spirit there.
You don't recognize yourself.
I don't recognize myself. It's like a completely different person. I didn't have any confidence. I didn't have any happiness, really. And so it took a couple of years of people being kind to me around me. And I have, like, such super people in Wilson's who built me back up again in a way. Yeah. It was a kind of building back up. And then I started to become who I am now.
And did the anger that you felt at home, did that dissipate then when you kind of owned yourself? And how were your family in... Obviously, they knew you were gay, but how did they react to it?
Well, they were completely fine, completely supportive. But it did take a couple of years for me to have a relationship with my parents again, and a relationship with my brother, especially, because he always got on really well with my parents. And I think he thought of me as like a little brat. But And I would always go home straight from school, slam the door, and I was in my room and I was playing Harry Potter, like on my PlayStation. So I was very, I wouldn't even talk to my parents about the bullying, because in a way I'd have to tell them I was being bullied because I was gay. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So there was no real way of talking, and I didn't want them to go into the school and talk to them, because that would be, I don't know, weakness. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, oh, James's dad was in here giving out to us, like, why can't he stand up for himself? So there was just so many roadblocks, I think, to try and fix it. So yeah.
And then you started to become the James that we know today.
Yeah.
And did you have to kind of start from scratch then in terms of building your confidence? Were you afraid to start to be yourself, or did, you know, did it take a while?
Yeah, I kind of see my life as like on a time span. In primary school, I'm closer to that James than the one in secondary school.
Yeah.
The primary school me is the kind of me I'm now. Mm-hmm. And then I was broken down for 3 years, stripped back to nothingness. Mm-hmm. And then I was built back up again in a way.
Did you ever go to therapy or anything?
No, I'd love to though.
Yeah, I think everyone should benefit. Yeah.
I always think, like, you go to the gym for your body. Therapy is like the gym for your brain. Mm-hmm. Everyone has shit to deal with.
Yeah.
Everyone and it's, I don't even think unhappy people should go to therapy. It's kind of anyone.
Yeah, it's like mental fitness or mental kind of resilience. It's so.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Important. But you obviously would have been very aware from a very young age of how, you know, what we experience mentally can impact on us physically. Mm. For me, a lot of my anxiety came about when I was like 16, 17, 18 and starting to become an adult. But by then, were you feeling very sure of yourself?
Yeah, I was. There was confidence there, but it took, as I said, a couple of years to bring me back up. But it's weird, like, the anxiety and panic attacks and stuff have only really happened recently, which is odd.
Yeah, I wonder, I have a
chapter. I'm supposed to be my happiest
now. I know, but sometimes that's when it kind of comes, like, it all shit comes up for you. Like, I have a chapter in the book about trying to figure out why you're here, and for some people it's so scary that they start to experience anxiety and they don't know why, or they think, I'm really happy now, everything's going great, why is this happening? And one of the reasons can be, I mean, it could be as simple as you've been having too much caffeine.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, obviously there is the stress to do with freelance life, but another reason could be that you went through something so major as a young person and you just sort of glided through it, that now that you're fully accepting of yourself, it's like when you stop at Christmas and you get the flu.
Yeah.
Like, now that you're like, here I am, now your subconscious, maybe in some weird way, is like, are you sure you've processed that?
Yeah.
So that's sometimes how I make sense of it. Yeah. You know, or someone loses a parent and they're fine through the, when it happens. And then like 2 years later, they fall apart.
Yeah.
And they're like, but I was fine when it happened. And it's like, because your body and your mind was trying to get you through it.
Yeah.
And now that you've taken your foot off the gas in terms of the pressure you put on yourself, it's like...
That's so true, actually. And like, even like going through that, that I never felt like there was going to be an end to it.
Yeah.
And I hear what you're saying.
Now, in a world with social media where... Sometimes we can be in a bit of an echo chamber where I sometimes, you know, I would just assume that the vote for abortion, the vote for gay marriage would just go through. But I'm, you know, in our kind of community, we're all very liberated and stuff. But you still, in this day and age, do you get people giving you that kind of bullshit that you had in school?
Yeah, like I had a comment from someone the other day being like, you've no actual real talents. You're riding on the coattails of your boyfriend who is actually a really good cook. And, you know, so...
That's just jealousy. How do you deal with that now in this day and age? Because you've learned, you were became so resilient by yourself.
Yeah, I think like, because I wouldn't get bullied in real life by anyone now. Do you know what I mean? You kind of come to an age. But yeah, like comments and stuff online, they used to affect me... And they still do for like a moment and then I'm totally over it, because I always say, like, you know, in general, people receive like 90% positivity and niceness in their day. But there is that 10%. But why concentrate on the tiny percent? Why not concentrate on the 90%? So whenever I do get shit from someone like that, I have to remind myself, hang on, there's a million other nice things that are said about me, or a million other nice people around me.
Yeah.
So I always remind myself that, I always check with myself that there's more goodness than badness in my life. And if there is a huge amount of goodness, then I'm on the right path.
I want to ask you about social media. So I know for a lot of people experiencing anxiety, sometimes social media can be a little bit of a, like, adding fuel to the fire. And for me, it certainly was, because I felt at the time when my anxiety was at its worst that we only put up the best bits and it was very curated. And if you didn't have anything good to say or anything great to show, there's no point in being honest. And I felt there was such a stigma with, you know, even putting up a picture of yourself with a spot, which I did yesterday. I actually had a spot yesterday that dribbled down my chin. It was so horrific. But... Do you find social media largely positive?
Yeah, and I think it's all about who you follow, and who you should curate your feed in a way that's good for your mental health, I think. I think if you're following really, really rich people and really, really glamorously gorgeous people, and that's all you're following, yeah, of course you're going to compare yourself. That's just human. But no, I follow kind of... And there's a time and a place for glamour and rich and gorgeousness. I'm all for that too. But I also follow just loads of real people and people who talk about themselves in a bad way, in a good way. There's really great Irish people who kind of talk, like even kind of fashion-y people that I follow, they talk about themselves when they've like breakouts or whatever, when they're going through bad skin. And I'm like, yes, like...
It's so reassuring to see people be real.
Yeah. And I think that's... not to be superficial, but I think it's kind of in vogue or kind of popular at the moment to talk about your downness, and that's good.
I know, yeah. I call it like owning your vulnerability. And like for me, and I'm sure it was the same for you, for so long, your vulnerability was your weakness. And then when you actually started to own it, it's your greatest strength.
Oh, 100%. Like I go around to schools now and talk about my experience with bullying. It's made me way more confident as well, speaking in front of people about this time in my life when I felt really small.
Yeah.
But it's weird that that's now my weapon, that time in my life where I was my most vulnerable and my most self-conscious and sad is now my kind of weapon in a way.
Yeah, like, but you had to kind of go through something really bad to have that self-awareness. And so sometimes in a way, like, you don't want people, like, I hope that with the books, people don't have to hit rock bottom to know to like watch out for it and stuff. But a lot of us do seem to either, you know, have to experience something bad like the bullying you went through, or go to the point of burnout and work before they realize that they have an appreciation for themselves and their mental health.
It's like that saying, like, you know, diamonds are made under pressure.
Yeah, lump of coal.
Lump of coal, yeah. And in a way, I, not that I would condone bullying or what happened to me is not necessarily a great thing, but it's definitely shaped me. And it's definitely given me a thicker skin now and stuff. Because in a way, like, I get loads of negativity. Like, I live my life online and I depend on my following and stuff to work and have a job. You know, that's just how it is. So I think whenever I get negativity, I think almost like my bullying in school was training.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like everything is happening for a reason.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I had a stunning time throughout secondary school, I'd probably find this really bloody hard.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, this is nothing. You should have seen what I went through.
Yeah, like if you can handle that, you can handle anything. And you mentioned there, like, living your life completely online. And sometimes I feel quite anxious that it's more of like a physical anxiety of like constantly having to pick up the phone, constantly refreshing the feeds and feeling like slightly like a slave to it, or like I need it, you know, because a lot of what we do, social media is work. Mm. So do you feel the pressure to constantly put yourself out there, or do you see social media very much as work, James, and then there's private James?
No, it's totally all the same. And that is something I try and work on reducing as well. Like I have that app moment and it tells you how long you're on everything.
That just gives me anxiety though.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, I'm on Instagram for 8 hours today, and then I panic, and then I'm in a dark place, and then I go on Instagram to make me happy. So it's just like a horrible vicious cycle. It's something I am working on, trying to reduce my time on my phone, because smartphones haven't been around long enough to test people and to see what it's doing to people.
Yeah.
It's definitely not like good, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think there's loads of positive things that can be said for social media. It's good for sharing ideas. I don't think, you know, the past two referendums would have been won so hugely without the power of social media and sharing stories and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think we all need to work on reducing our phone time.
Yeah, just having a more healthy relationship with it. You know, even like first thing in the morning, I won't even say good morning to my husband. I'll be like, give me my phone.
Totally.
And I get such a sense. Do you get a sense of gratification with the likes and the follows?
100%. When I put up something and there's a good, healthy amount of likes coming through,
I feel a good feeling.
It's a rush. It's awful. Well, they do say it's an endorphin. Yeah,
it's concerning though. Because then like sometimes if you put something up and it didn't do well, you'd be like,
Yeah.
So I don't like...
Was this the right time to put it up?
But like, you know, if that's going to be part of your job, you need to have your sense of self-worth and your core values intact so that that shit doesn't affect you. So do you have a very clear sense of your worth these days?
Yeah, and I have a very clear sense of where I'm going too. I hope to open up a cafe with my boyfriend William
at the
end of it. Fingers crossed. So I think it's good to, if you are in this kind of almost superficial world that we're in, you kind of have to have, where am I going to be in 5 years? You have to have a kind of goal and something at the end. Yeah, because it's all kind of fickle, you know, this world of social media and where it's going and who will last and who will fall off, and you can be taken down like that. And so you kind of have to have backups.
Say the wrong thing and be completely excommunicated.
Yeah.
God. And for me, moving on to the confidence kit, which was, again, you know, after I got myself back on an even keel with the anxiety, I was like, oh, I need to kind of start building myself up again in terms of confidence and, you know, fear of failure, fear of what people would think of you.
Yeah.
And something that I thought was crucial and people don't do enough of in this very fast-paced social media world is kind of take stock of how far we've come, or, you know, like social comparison is the go-to, but actually temporal comparison, which is looking at yourself versus yourself from another time, is far more healthy, whereas social comparison creates like a culture of one-upmanship and you know, nobody wins. So I always ask people on the podcast, you know, if you look back and or even look forward, you must be really proud of yourself. Do you take the time to be proud of yourself and celebrate how far you've come as a person, not just success?
Do you know what? Only in these moments when I'm asked and I can actually think about it, I am actually proud of what I've done and what I'm doing. But day to day when I'm running around doing my bits, I don't feel like I'm doing enough. I don't know if it's the correct term, but like imposter syndrome. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm ever doing enough. Mm-hmm. But when I'm asked questions like that, I'm like, hang on, I wrote a book. I'm on Ireland's Got More Talent. I'm doing loads of bits and bobs that, you know, I should be proud of what I'm doing, but I don't think I'll, and maybe it's a good thing, I don't think I'll ever feel like I have enough or I'm doing enough. And I think, but in a way, I think that keeps me driven. And it keeps me wanting more and doing more. But no, I don't usually, I should probably, but I don't usually take stock of what I've done, and I don't take the time to be proud of stuff I've done. But I think that's the age we live in, and especially for someone who's self-employed, you'll know this as well, you can't just have one job, you're doing about 10 different jobs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, someone asked me earlier, like, so what do you do? And I was like, how long do you have?
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard. It's like a jack of all trades, master of none is my fear.
Least favorite question to be asked sometimes. You know, you're in a taxi making small talk and he's like, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I work in advertising. Or I'm a plumber. Yeah. I cannot explain what I do.
Sometimes I just say, oh, I'm a journalist. And they're like, oh. And then I'm like, not like a real journalist. Like, I'm not on the front lines reporting on the war. I'm like, here's 10 lip glosses you should try. And then I'm like, oh my God. But, you know, that kind of work is needed. And there's a place for it. And I think, like, imposter syndrome comes from feeling that what you put out there publicly is at odds with how you view yourself privately.
Yeah.
But I think for you, you probably don't have that disconnect because you are what you get. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're not being a completely different person and you're not pretending to be something that you're not. And you're not, you know, when you do these jobs, it's not like, oh, here comes someone who's got 20 years as a broadcast expert. They want you for being you.
Yeah.
So,
but in a way, that's also kind of a bit nervy because I am me all of the time. So when I'm being judged or people are talking about me online or anything like that, there's no like, I don't know, if you're, you know, fronting a big show on RTE, that's almost like you switch that on for the show. So yeah. You can probably disconnect from that or and it's like, well, that's not who I am in private life. Whereas when I'm being spoken about in a negative sense online or wherever it may be, they're literally talking about me and not my product or not my persona I put on. So it is always something I slightly struggle with.
Yeah. Can you tell me about a time recently where you had to step outside your comfort zone and what did that feel like?
God, that's almost daily. Probably public speaking is when I always step outside my comfort zone. And it's something I have to do a lot of in my work, which is funny because I hate it.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's so awful. But I always find like a minute into it, I found my footing and I'm fine. But that, like the lead up to it and about to get on stage or about to, like, it's disgusting.
I know.
I'm always like, I'm never doing this again.
I know. I can't eat. I always like literally I'm in the toilet. I'm like, no, why do I put myself through this? It's not worth it at all.
But
when you go into the learning zone outside the comfort zone, then you expand your comfort zone.
That's
and then
it.
You increase your confidence.
Like, I always feel like, say if I was to compare myself now to public speaking to like 2 years ago, so different. And I feel like you slowly chip away at something, like you can get good at it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about right confidence. What people get wrong is that they think they might look at you and say, oh, he's a really confident person. I'm not. I know. But like what they're mistaking is personality and confidence. So you have you're an extroverted personality. You're loud and chatty and, you know, you're outgoing and you're social. But confidence is a skill.
It's a different thing.
Yeah, like it's a belief in yourself.
Skill.
But it's something that we can all work on, and you could be a really introverted, quiet person and have an unbelievable level of confidence in your work or in your family. Like, confidence comes in different verticals of our life. It's not just like a blanket thing, you know. And I would have always thought, oh, like, I need to be more confident. It's like, in what? Like, you know, confidence, it's not this big umbrella. It's, you could be, it's like someone could be a really confident musician and then really, really unconfident socially.
Yeah.
You know, so
completely.
Social anxiety obviously isn't something that you've experienced.
What would that mean?
Feeling it's not something I really experienced either, a slight bit, but people ask me a lot, so I wanted to bring it up, if we could talk about social anxiety, you know, where you're worried about, sometimes I just get it in my head if I'm in a social situation, oh, I'm saying something stupid, or
no, I would have that.
Okay.
Completely. I'm always slightly filtering what I'm saying and always overthinking things, and then I'd say something and then be so embarrassed about it. And it's like a tiny little thing, and then I'm overplaying, why did I bloody say that, like that's so cringe.
I know.
So no, I would totally suffer that, and I would always kind of feel like people are judging me, or I'd walk away and be like, oh god, because I am a very excitable person, and I get a bit like jittery and stuff, and I feel then when I kind of come back down, I'm like, oh god, what's the state of me? So it would, I always do, I'm overthinking how I act. I know. And how
well,
I behave.
What I've learned from all the chats that I've been having on this podcast is that like we're all so wrapped up in thinking, oh my god, I've said the most stupid thing. Like, I said the most stupid thing to Spencer and Vogue through the day when we were leaving the awards, and because I'd been in their house to record in London, and then I bumped into them again at an awards, and as I was leaving, they were leaving, and Spencer was like, oh hi, and I was like, oh, you probably don't recognize me, I was in your house last week, and he was like, oh yeah, lovely, and then I was like, you were in your boxers, because he was like running in and out of the kitchen with his boxers, and I was like, why did I say that? And then like I didn't say anything else, and then they just got in the taxi, and then my taxi home, I was like,
oh my god,
you idiot.
Yeah, I'd say stuff like that all the time.
But
side note, he looks fantastic in his boxers.
Yeah, well, he does. I mean, if I look like he had boxers, I'd be walking around with them as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, social anxiety is probably something people experience more on a day-to-day level. It's just like slightly there.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for people? Maybe before you give me your advice, tell me, what do you do on a daily basis or even like a weekly basis to keep yourself in check and to be, you know, on top of things and to own it?
To be honest, I require a lot of alone time. I think I come across as someone who's always surrounded by people and always run around the place. But like, during the week, I'm at home recharging almost. And I'm not trying to say I'm the busiest person or I do loads of things, but even like I just require a lot of recharge time as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a very introverted person in a way.
Yeah.
So
that's, it's ambivert is the word, is it?
What's that?
Where you're like a bit of both?
Yeah, I'm definitely a bit of both. Yeah. Like, I love like meeting people, having chats, doing stuff on stage, presenting things on TV, but I adore myself. I almost have been known to put my phone on airplane mode and just me and my cat and YouTube documentaries and
dream
for hours on end on my own. So that's keeps me in line and keeps me sane, I think.
And then in terms of advice for if someone's listening, maybe they're, you know, maybe they haven't come out yet, maybe they're gay, or maybe they're not and they're just getting bullied, or maybe they're just struggling with accepting themselves. Because for me, the crux of owning it and the message is that acceptance is key, and only when we stop resisting where we are now do things embrace, which sometimes is a very hard pill to swallow when you're like, I don't want to be bullied, or I don't want to feel this way, or I don't, you know, want this anxiety. But I think you like hit the nail on the head about when you started to own yourself. So what would your advice be for someone listening who's maybe not where you are now, but
like, I think as hard as it is to know in the moment, I think it's important to realize that there's a lot of nice people out there, like really kind people who are within meters of you. And I think when once you're in a dark place, you forget about that. But look around you and just really look at people, because that guy that stepped in and almost kind of saved my sanity, I didn't realize he was so close. He was always in the on the other side of the classroom. I thought everyone around me was not nice, and everyone hated me. And there's people around you that love you, and that's so important to realize and know. And then as cringe as it is, it always gets better. Like, it really does. What is happening now will pass. And that you really have to remember that in the moment. And it's like when I was getting those panic attacks, I eventually was like, this will pass. This isn't going to kill me. It's going to pass. So once you realize how it's also not to be like put anyone down, but realize how small you are in the world is actually kind of a refreshing thing.
Yeah, I know.
And it puts yourself in context, and it puts your problems in context as well. You're a tiny dot on this planet, and there's huge things going on, serious big things going on with people and the world. So just look at it in that sense.
Yeah.
I feel like the solution to all this is simpler than we think.
So much.
Do you know
simpler.
What I mean?
Yeah.
It's about surrounding yourself with nice people, and realizing that, you're a tiny little splash in the world.
Yeah. And just own that.
Yeah. I'm only here for a little minute. Enjoy it.
No, that actually gives me anxiety, though.
Yeah. Okay. Stop.
James Cavanagh, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.